Welcome to the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news, stories, and analysis on Canadian basketball. I'm your host, Lee Ben Osman. This episode, we're going to preview and break down some of the top Canadian talent in college basketball. The NCAA season is right around the corner. The draft class of 2026 is very exciting, if you ask me. AJ DeBanza dropping 30-plus, I believe, in an exhibition game against Nebraska. Cameron Bruiser also doing the same against, I think it was UCF. Darren Peterson, Kansas. He's probably the guy I would take right now with the number one pick in the 2026 NBA draft. But a lot could change. On this episode, like I said, we'll be focusing on Canadian names you should know ahead of the season, sleepers, potential future draft picks, and give you our unfiltered thoughts on some of the players this year. And I'll be honest, this might be a down year in terms of Canadian talent in college basketball, but still some good names. But before we get into all that, I just want to say thank you for the love we got on the last pod we did with St. Bonaventure's Frank Mitchell from Toronto. Had a lot of people reach out. I want to shout out EZ83 on Twitter. He DM'd me. He said he's been enjoying the podcast. He relates with my obsession with Bellissimo's, one of the best spots in the city of Toronto. If you know, you know. I don't got to tell you much. Someone got to tell them to give me a sponsorship at this point. Too much free promo. But yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, shoot me a message on Twitter, IG. Let me know what podcast you've been enjoying. I want to shout some of you guys out. We got some other Canadian college basketball guests in the works, hopefully coming in the month of November. Stay tuned for all of that. But like I always say, if you've been enjoying the pods, leave a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen. Show some love. Follow us on IG, Twitter. Everything is down in the description below. But without further ado, joining me to break down some of the top Canadian in college basketball is another Canadian that watches probably the most college basketball out of all the Canadians I know. He knows about programs I've never heard of. There's a lot of them. He used to work at The Score and is now a college basketball analyst and consultant. Matthew Winnick, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the recognition as the person who is Canadian who knows the most about NCAA college basketball, which I don't take lightly. So that means a lot. I really appreciate it.
I follow you. I see the spreadsheets tracking down all the names in college basketball. I don't know how you do it. It's very impressive. Just tell me, what does preparation look like before a college season like this for you?
Yeah, it's a 365-day-a-year job, right? Because, I mean, think about it for coaches. That they're playing their season, and the week it ends, the transfer portal is immediately hitting, and they're trying to find their next team for the next year within a week or within a month. And then it's just a quick prep to understand who is where, who made good choices, who made bad choices, and then kind of move along. And then you add the money piece in, too. It's really such a hectic industry. So if you take a full month off. If I went to Europe for a month, I'd come back and I wouldn't have any idea about what anything is anymore. So you got to be on the ball.
Yeah. Do an impressive job. Tap in with Matthew. We'll get, I feel like, deep into the Canadian talk right now. But in assessment wise, Canadians in college basketball this season, are there a lot of standouts in your eyes? Like, where does this compare to like years past? Like, I'm obviously thinking, because I cover like a lot of the draft kind of stuff, Canadians that enter that process. I'm like looking at, is there a surefire guy? That's what I keep wondering. And I question, but what's your assessment of Canadians in college basketball this season?
Yeah, I think as it pertains to, you know, NBA future, it's not necessarily the greatest of classes, just because a lot of the guys, you know, are a little undersized. They might not be prototypical NBA players from a physical profile, right? So there are some guys that will have really successful careers either near the tail end of it or the beginning of it in college hoops. But I don't see anybody that's in the NCAA right now that is probably a surefire NBA player. Now, obviously, everyone has their own path, and whether it's the G League or two ways or whatever it might be, there will be players in college basketball that are Canadian that will see NBA time. It just might not be via the draft or especially in the first round.
Yeah. A name that probably has been getting a lot of draft buzz in the last few years. I think it'd be reminiscent if we don't like start with this guy, Xavier Lee, Princeton, now headed to Florida, the Gators that just won the national championship this past year. What was your thoughts on Xavier Lee's decision to transfer? Because I know just from speaking to some people, he, I think his final three was Kansas. It was St. John's. I think Duke was also in the mix. People don't realize that Duke was also in the mix, but he decided on Florida. What were your thoughts on his decision to transfer initially and decision to land on Florida?
Yeah, I mean, when the national champions, the reigning national champions who lose their entire guard room, ask you to come and fill those big shoes, like, that's as big of a compliment as you could possibly get as a player. For Xavien Lee to leave an Ivy League degree, to leave Princeton before he's all said and done, that has only really ever been done, at least in headways, by Danny Wolfe. And that obviously, who went to Michigan and then became a first round NBA draft pick. So that is also not a decision that is taken lightly. Like, you are really banking on your future as a high level professional basketball player if you're going to bypass that degree 1 year away from graduating from Princeton. As it comes to going to Florida, like, he is going to have to change his role a little bit because he was the on-ball option at Princeton. Everything ran through him as an on-ball guard. He got to his spots. He was not playing against the athletes that SEC competition has. So this will put him to the test. If there is an NBA, high-level NBA prospect in this class, it's Lee. And it happens because he continues to play how he did in the Ivy League in the big, bad SEC.
Yeah, Lee averaged 16.9 points, 6.1 rebounds, 5.5 assists at Princeton last year. I watched his game probably the most out of any Canadians outside of maybe Will Riley, Ryan Nemhard, those guys. Probably I watched him the most. And you talked about it. He's going to go to Florida. He's going to have to adjust his role. And he probably also, if you asked him maybe when he first got to Princeton, he probably didn't think NBA was a possibility until sophomore year. Takes off. And I don't know what, I don't know how much you watched of Global Jam this past year, but I feel like in that setting, he was kind of preparing for what his role might be in Florida, kind of taking a backseat sometimes to guys like Aiden Holloway, who played for Canada for the first time, get them their shots, was kind of this facilitator. I think that's kind of what he was kind of preparing for maybe, but what were your thoughts on, I don't know if you watched him much in Global Jam.
Yeah, look, it's very important for Xavien Lee to be able to play on and off the ball at Florida this year. You look at his numbers last year at Princeton. He took 162 threes, 115 of them were off of the dribble, which means only 46 were off of the catch. So he was not someone who was spacing the floor for Princeton. He was the one that was finding floor spacers. And when you're playing at the high major level, you have to be able to do both. If you're playing in the NBA, you're not going to be the starting point guard or even the backup point guard on an NBA team from the get-go. So it's very important for the future of his basketball career, both this year and moving forward, to be able to play on and off the ball. So being able to do that Global Jam is just, you know, the first step of something he's going to have to showcase all season.
I think the biggest question everyone is wondering, how does he fit alongside Boogie Flank? What are your thoughts on that fit? And I don't know, because I feel like Boogie was obviously like kind of a late addition. He was going through the NBA draft process. I was kind of shocked that he came back to college. Obviously, the bag is, you know, the bag talks sometimes. So I don't know how much he made, but I believe that probably was a factor too. But what are your thoughts on just like the fit between him and Boogie?
They're going to naturally, if you just go off of their statistics last year, it's not a good fit. Because both of them were heavy on ball, not great off-ball shooters, very much pick-and-roll players. And obviously, you can only run pick-and-roll with one player at a time. But it's going to be up to them. Like, they're both very good basketball players. It's going to be up to them to figure out when it works for each other to have the ball and on and off the ball, and then just being able to space it. Like, it's going to help them both in the future, being able to play both guard positions, especially given they're not necessarily huge or overly athletic as players. So this is going to help them in the long run, being able to play together, but it might not be the easiest to fit off the bat. Like, Florida begins their season with a bang against Arizona in day one in less than 2 weeks from now. And it might take a couple of weeks for them to really figure out what makes sense in actual game action.
What does a good year look like for Xavien Lee in your eyes?
I think that it's showing that he can do more than what he did at Princeton. He was a very, very specific type of player at Princeton, and they needed him to be that. Like, let's not say that he was being, you know, a flawed player. He was being what they needed him to be. But what can you open up? Like, has he gotten stronger in the offseason? Will he be a better defender? Will he be a better off-ball shooter? Like, what can he provide to a winning team at the highest level that's a successful season for him, is showing pieces of his game that he hasn't had the chance to show, just because he may be a way better defender than he's shown, but he didn't have the energy because he was so busy offensively. Like, we're going to learn a lot about that with him.
And yeah, I spoke to some coaches on that Global Jam staff. I think for them, it was like, yeah, if he's going to make it to the league, the biggest thing is the defense on that end. That's kind of what I think they were pushing him on. And physically, I think he's a completely different guy than he was 2 years ago. I don't know how much he weighs now, but probably close to 200. And I know the way he eats, the guy eats like five times a day. It's insane. If you watch, he has a good YouTube series, Nick in a Cut. There's a 2-hour vlog following him around. I watched some of those, and like the way he goes about his days are pretty insane. But yeah, he's a name. I think from what I heard when he went through the draft process the year prior, had two-way offers from NBA teams. Teams were interested. It was just the size. I think that was like the biggest concern. Now he's going to the SEC. I would say, you would probably say too, the best conference in college basketball. And yeah, I just remember just like, I think he worked out for like 8 or 9 teams, looked really solid in the G League Elite Showcase at the Combine. Even though that doesn't really matter much sometimes, because like that's kind of like a freelance basketball type of setting. But he has interest from teams that I spoke to. I think for him, it's probably just the body, the defense. Can he shoot the 3-ball efficiently at a high level, catch and shoot off the ball in a role that obviously sometimes he might not have the ball to create in the NBA, because that might not be the role straight off the gate, right? But for you, whatever, obviously, we talked about it. Not many, like on ESPN, or any really draft rankings, maybe Bleacher Report has Xavier Lee. They've been fans of him. But there's not a Canadian in the top 60 from, I believe, right now on any draft boards. Is he a name that you see could potentially be on there? Like, what do you think his chances are of getting drafted this year?
Yeah, I think he has the highest upside simply because he's going to be on national TV. And you'd think, okay, national TV doesn't matter. Like, it does. Scouts are looking at these games. NBA draft analysts are looking at these games far more than, you know, even Elijah Mahi, someone we'll talk about, is going to be on national TV 5 times. Like, Xavier Lee will be on national TV 20 times. That does matter. So if he's able to be the number one, you know, on-ball option, if he's better than Boogie Fland as the on-ball creator, if that, you know, people love to look at three-point percentage. If he shoots 40% from three, like, I'd be lying if I told you that I haven't heard enough people that have said the difference between just seeing 39% and seeing 40% on three. When you don't get great looks on a guy, like, if you're the main option on Florida as an on-ball creator, if you shoot 40% from three, if you have put on that weight, if you can at least hang defensively in the SEC, like, these are all small, tangible things that may not really matter in the long run, but it gets you on draft boards, and then it gets you invited to combines, and then it allows you to show yourself often in a situation you may have not been in otherwise. So there are definitely ways in which he's able to sort of jump up, and the exposure is really the key piece.
Yeah, before we leave off on Florida, there's another guy on that roster, another Canadian. I had here that he was 7'6", but I think it might be 7'9" at this point. The tallest teenager in world record. I don't know what he said. He might be 8 foot at this point. Redshirted last year at Florida. Olivier Roux played with Canada basketball at the FIBA U19 this past summer. And I'll be honest with you, I was a bit disappointed in what he showcased, having a year off just to work on his game. I thought he should have been, by far, a year in college on that team, the best big man. But I would say he was probably one of the worst, in my opinion, to be honest with you. I don't know what your thoughts are on him, but I look back at like Zach Edey at the FIBA U19. He was a guy at his size, people had doubts on if he was going to get drafted in the first round, the first time he went around the draft process. Ends up obviously getting picked by Memphis, but was still a controversial pick that high. This, to me, is another level. What are your thoughts on Olivier Roux? Hopefully I'm pronouncing the last name right. I try to work on my French a little bit, but what are your thoughts on him? Is he a guy we could expect playing this year on Florida's roster?
He will not play this year on Florida's roster. For one, they have a pretty loaded front court. They have at least 4 guys that are not only going to be playing big minutes, but are among the better big men front court players in the entire SEC. What people forget about Olivier Roux is he's not a scholarship player at the University of Florida. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean anything, but he is a preferred walk-on. He chose to go to Florida as a walk-on. This is true. Obviously, the summer with Canada basketball did not go how most people hoped it would after a year playing in Florida's system. The reality is this. Even for Zach Edey, someone who moves way better than Ryu, a little bit smaller, but better footwork, better hand-eye, like better everything athletically, just a little bit smaller, Purdue, when he was in college, still ran everything around him. The defensive scheme they ran was for him. The offensive scheme they ran, the shooters they had, everything was for Edey so that he could succeed it. And obviously it worked to an insane degree. If Olivier Rioux is ever going to be successful in basketball, it has to be for a scheme for him. Because when you just throw him on Canada basketball and you say, just like go hoop, like, go play, he doesn't move well enough to do that. He can't just play any defensive scheme because he has to stay around the rim. You need to get him the ball in advantageous positions because he's not going to create advantageous positions on his own. So with Florida, a team that has really high expectations, a lot of returning front court guys, and he's technically going to probably dress this year and be a freshman, it's not attainable to see him play any level of competitive minutes. Now, Todd Golden, Florida's coach, loves to crash the offensive glass, and he loves to play drop coverage. Those are two things that in the future, perhaps Ryu can do if he wants to stick it out at Florida. He could go to maybe a mid-major or even a U Sports route and play real minutes eventually, but he's very far from that right now.
I was going to ask you this. Would you stay at Florida if he doesn't play? If he doesn't play another year, would you go to a mid-major? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, he was in a Canadian Tire commercial this year, right? Like, he's getting his NIL money.
Yeah.
It's really tough because he could stay at Florida. They have great, like, abilities for him to make a lot of money. And the NIL system at a high major school is so much more advanced than at a mid-major school. Like, for 10 extra minutes a game, I would stay at Florida. I would sulk in, you know, being the tallest teenager in the world. Like do that. Have your time and then kind of go from there. But I would stay.
Yeah, it's a trick. Because I get asked a lot. People are like, what about Olivier Rioux? And I'm like, I don't think he's a player. I don't think he's a guy that's going to be a factor at all. I'm kind of shocked at times when I'm watching the FIBA U19 and Canada basketball starting him. I'm like, I don't think he should be starting. There's a high school player that's ranked that's went on a visit to Duke, Maxi Meyer, just recently. I think he might be the next best young talent in high school basketball at his size right now. So, and I don't know, and he was playing better than Ryu. I heard more stuff about Max than I heard about Olivier. So it's like, I'm trying to figure out, it's a tricky situation because you hear all this hype, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to say much about Olivier Ryu. I just wanted to get your thoughts. Obviously, another Florida guy that'll be there. I think a lot of people have questions about him, but from what I'm gauging from your thoughts, he's not really a player that people should be expecting much from, right?
Yeah, no, I would say that at least this year, maybe one day, because he will still have 4 years of eligibility. So maybe one day, but it won't be this year.
Yeah. Let's move on. We kind of talked about him, mentioned him for a second. Elijah Mahi, Santa Clara, a guy that I watched at Global Jam this past year. And I'll be honest, not the greatest performance compared to what he looked like 2 years prior at Global Jam, where he kind of shocked everybody coming from JUCO. I believe he played at Utah Valley. But I'll be honest, watching his games at Santa Clara, I see his mold, his prototype, his build, an NBA type of build that I think teams look for. What are your thoughts on Elijah Mahi? Is he a name that could get drafted? What are your impressions on him?
Yeah, I mean, listen, last year he came into college basketball without a ton of expectations. He was a really highly ranked JUCO player, but not every highly ranked JUCO player really pans out, especially in year one. It can take time, and he was awesome. But it's worth mentioning, you know, he started a third of their team's games. He wasn't one of the main options. He was not the wing that opponents were scouting. That was Adama Ball, who was, you know, an NBA draft prospect prior to the year. And this had been Herb Sendek, the coach at Santa Clara's thing for a while. He had Jalen Williams, who obviously has gone on to do unbelievable things in the NBA. He kind of revitalized Brandon Pajemski's career, and he was known. And then Adama Ball went from being nothing at Arizona to star at Santa Clara. So he's been known as this, like, wing guard, you know, he's going to develop you and make you an NBA player. And this year, that person is Elijah Mahi. He is going to be the most scouted against player on Santa Clara in the WCC, where St. Mary's and Gonzaga play. And he was just voted today first team all WCC in the preseason.
Interesting.
He's going to lead the team in shot attempts. He's probably not going to shoot 43% from three again, because there's going to be way more defensive coverage on him. If he has as efficient of a year and as successful of a year, both as a rebounder, as a passer, all the different things he did, with all the attention on him, with a higher usage rate playing and starting every game, then now you're talking about someone who can easily be at minimum a second round pick. But you saw, like, a lot more expectations on him in Global Jam year two than year one, and the efficiency went way down. So there's no way to know for sure whether he's going to be able to actually produce with so much more attention on him.
Yeah, that's a good point. It'll be interesting to see, because Global Jam, I honestly sometimes I don't put much weight to it, because then we watched a guy like Leonard Miller play at Global Jam, and I think a lot of people were like questioning if he could get to the NBA at that point after that Global Jam run. But he ended up getting drafted by Minnesota. Just to go through Mahi's stats at Global Jam: 11 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists against Japan. That was probably his best game. And then against Georgetown, 3 points, 1 of 7 shooting, 7 points, 2 of 9 shooting against Brazil. Compared to the year prior, scored in double figures in 3 of the 4 games, shot about 51%. This year, he was shooting 26.9%. I say that, I take it with a grain of salt, Global Jam stats, I've said it before, but it's interesting just to see, because I'll be honest, I've talked to teams and I said, hey, what do you think about Elijah Mahi? Some teams, like you mentioned, he wasn't scouted much. Teams, scouts didn't really know much about him. So I don't know. I think he needs to improve the handle. I think that's probably the biggest thing. I know he's been in the gym with guys like in Humber College. I think he's been in workouts with Nembhard, those guys. So he's around NBA talent. He's seeing what the day-to-day process is like. So Elijah Mahi, to me, if there's two guys that I think, maybe three, I'll probably mention another name, if things go amazingly correct, I think they could get drafted. But Mahi's a name, just the size. I had someone that I know guarded him this summer, and he was just like, man, this guy is, it's an NBA body. That's what they were telling me about. So yeah, any last thoughts on Mahi?
Yeah, no, NBA body, and like Santa Clara is going to let him play make. Like he was a very good passer last year, at least for a wing. And you're saying he's working on his handle. Like he's going to be put in the Jalen Williams mold, obviously coming out of Santa Clara. And they have a very similar physical profile. Like if he can put up similar stats, like scouts are going to see that comparison and they're going to run with it.
Is there a returning Canadian in your eyes that you could see have a breakout year, that outside of like the top names that we're obviously discussing, is there a name that you're like, people should be keeping an eye on this guy?
Yeah, someone that, you know, we haven't talked about yet, and I don't think we'll get to if I don't bring him up now, is in a much smaller Division One school. You said I like to go deep. LIU, they have a lot of Canadians. Their three best players are probably Canadian, but they have a guy, Malachi Davis. Mm-hmm. One of the highest usage players in the country last year, had some speed bumps up and down, not the most efficient, but he is a bucket getter, and he's going to have the keys to the car at LIU, a team that is very highly favored to win their conference and make a visit to March Madness. He might average 20 points per game, and that's going to be very notable. He's someone that, whether it's the NBA or whether it's the CEBL or whatever it might be, like he is going to be a fixture in Canadian hoops for a long time to come, because he's an elite scorer. He did it at the JUCO level. He got his way to Arizona State, where it didn't quite work out, but I think he's going to have an awesome year, and he's probably going to be the highest scoring Canadian in college basketball this year.
Yep. LIU shout. We had Dalmore Alley on the podcast, talked about him a lot, amped up his guys, Malachi Davis, big year, potential NCAA tournament team. And yeah, Malachi Davis, I remember watching that kid in high school, Central Tech days. And to see that he's become a scorer, like he was a guy that used to just jump out the gym, athleticism through the roof. But the way he's just, adapted his game, man. It's beautiful to see. Obviously didn't have the greatest experience, I believe, at Arizona State, but now goes to LIU. And I think teams were poaching him. Teams wanted him to go to a higher major, but he's stuck. He believes in Rod Strickland's vision for him, and the team, that's his team. So a name that I'm glad you mentioned, because we probably wouldn't have gotten to it, but I want to shout out LIU, a team I'll probably be trying to tune into. I'm going to have some people. I don't know, where do you find the links for games like this, for especially these?
You're in luck. LIU is in the NEC, which has their own free network. It's called NEC Front Row. You can watch every single conference game for free.
Oh, is this illegal streaming? Because I want to promote
NEC
that.
NEC Front Row, is their own conference. They have it on their own website. It's not paywalled. You can watch all their conference games. Once January rolls around, you can get every single Malachi Davis game for free.
You guys tap in. I'm going to be tapping in to Dal Moore on that team. A good name to mention. Next question that I have for you. Canadian freshman in college basketball. Last year we had Will Riley, a guy that ends up going in the first round, drafted by the Washington Wizards. Elite scorer. Is there any freshman coming into college basketball this season that could surprise people?
Yeah, listen, I've always been, tuning into these Canada U16, U17 games over the years. And someone who I think his development may have stagnated a little bit, someone who I was really high on in the youth process is Efeosa Oliogu, someone who is starting out his college career at Butler. Someone who was probably ranked a little bit higher a couple of years ago, ended off as like a lower four-star guy. And maybe his name kind of fell through the cracks for some Canadian basketball fans that weren't paying attention when he was more hyped up as a prospect, you know, in his younger high school days. But he has the chance on a Butler team that doesn't have a ton in terms of guards and wings to make a real impact. He has a college basketball-ready body. He's a lot stronger, more physically present than most freshmen. And they just played their first exhibition game. Obviously, take those with a grain of salt. They don't actually matter. He was their second leading scorer in the game. He got to the free throw line 10 times, 7 for 10 from the free throw line, had 12 points, 4 assists, 2 offensive boards. He's someone that physicality, even if the skill level may have not quite developed at the level that you were hoping over the past couple of years, he's going to play real minutes in the Big East, and he's going to have the chance to lay a foundation for a really good career.
Yeah, you mentioned it. Obviously, a Butler team. They just lost Montreal's Jamil Telfer, a guy that just signed a two-way contract. Congrats to him. We had him on the podcast at Summer League, signed a two-way with the Clippers. But yeah, this team is going to, I feel like Efosa is going to have a lot of chance, opportunity just to run kind of a young team. And yeah, he was a guy, I think, and I hate to put this label, but like, you know, there's always like the, okay, who's the next Wiggins? Who's the next Jamal Murray out of Canada, right? And I think he got that label, just like we probably talked about, Elijah Fisher got that label, right? And I don't know if it helped him out, right? But I think he still put up numbers in high school basketball, played at OTE, spent a year there. I think looked pretty solid too, FIBA U19 with Canada basketball. I always just question, and I think it's been a question for the last few years, is how does the shot look? I think that's been, everyone was wondering that. I know he's an elite downhill attacker. I believe he's a very underrated passer. At OT, I think they were honing in on that for him. And I think this past year too, at I think it was William Academy. That's where he was at. So I think, honestly, I think Efosa, like you said, he has the body. He has the body. The biggest thing, and NBA teams are always going to wonder this, is can you shoot at the NBA level? The line is deeper. Can you translate that to the next level? And that's my biggest question with Efosa. But I'm excited just to watch him. Freakish athlete. He had a dunk in the FIBA U19 where he caught it like he was like levitating. Like it was, man, insane. I'm excited to watch him. Might go out. I don't know how far Butler is from Toronto. I might want to go check out a game just to tap in. Do you go out to much college games?
I'm definitely going to go a little bit more often this year, but that's one of the best environments in all of college hoops too. So, I mean, it's probably like 2/3, 3/4 of the way to Chicago. So you add those in, find a way to go to reason to go to Chicago, then find your way to Hinkle Fieldhouse and watch a game at Butler.
Yeah. Efosa, a name, go tap in Butler. Another name I really wanted to mention, Nathan George. From Syracuse, just transferred from Georgia Tech, a point guard, I feel like was probably under the radar in a lot of Canadians' eyes a few years back, but plays for Raptors legend Damon Stoudemire, excels, and now is headed to Syracuse, playing with Kion Anthony over there. But I believe Nathan George is going to be a primary focus. He's going to have the ball a lot in his hands at Syracuse. What was your impressions of like Nate George transferring over to Syracuse?
I'll be honest. I wish that Nate George stayed. I'm a big Nate George fan. I think he has an awesome passing vision. And the good thing with him and with Damon Stoudemire at Georgia Tech is Damon, you know, former point guard himself, loves to run pick and rolls like over and over and over again. He had an awesome pick and roll partner in big man Bade Ndongo, who might be an NBA draft pick one day. And now he's going to a team in Syracuse where there's a lot of ISO scorers. And that's something that, you know, head coach Red Autry, they haven't ran as much pick and roll as Georgia Tech did. And I think that might not be the best for Nate George to be able to, you know, show what he can do on the college basketball court. His shot percentage went way up as a sophomore, and it made him a little bit more inefficient from the field. I think what would have been best for him is for him to continue to showcase that passing skill that he did better than, you know, any Canadian in college hoops last year that wasn't named Ryan Nemhard. And, you know, show that the three-pointer is going to stay more consistent, that he's going to be able to finish at the rim stronger. Now I feel like he's not going to be as much of an on-ball presence at Syracuse, just named along some other guys, you know, some higher paid guys, let's say. So it'll be up to him. You know, he'll have to be able to make, you know, do with the touches that he has. And if he's able to, maybe he'll be more efficient because he's not going to have the ball as much and it'll end up being better for him. But he really had an offensive system that worked for his skill set with Stoudemire and Georgia Tech. And obviously he chose to go to perhaps a higher profile school in exchange.
Yeah, Nathan George averaged 12.3 points, 6.5 assists, 4.2 rebounds in his sophomore season at Georgia Tech. I don't know too much behind the move to Syracuse, but from what I know, there's a lot of pressure on that Syracuse program to deliver, to win games. So Syracuse is a team I'm going to be watching a lot. Like I said, George, we talked about an elite passer. I would say now that Ryan Nemhard has left college basketball, probably the best passer among Canadians in college basketball. Average, like I said, 6.5, probably deserves more credit. Like you said, just a wizard in the pick and roll, navigating ball screens. Just I want to track, you probably track this later this season. Just I feel like he might be throwing the most lobs in college basketball last year, at least, that he did. So but like you mentioned, like I when I talk to scouts, it's always about the efficiency as a scorer, as a shooter. He's 6'3". He shot 31.4% from three in his first year, 33.9% in his second year. We'll give him 34%. A lot better at the line, 78.9% this past year from 69% his first year. So I think when I talk to people, it's like, hey, can he get Daniel? Can he create his own shot? And then also, can he shoot the basketball? That's the biggest question for a lot of Canadians. That's why Will Riley gets drafted, because he didn't have the greatest percentage, but the way that guy can be able to create his own shot, just like, and the shooting, like, it's weird that Will Riley was a better off-ball creator than he was just like a standstill shooter. But that translates, you know, that translates to the NBA, and that's what teams are looking for. So the biggest question I feel like for Nathan George is the shooting. I want to get your thoughts on this. We're going through a lot of names. We went through Xavier Lee. We went through Nathan George. I'm forgetting some other guys we mentioned Malachi Davis. A lot of guys transfer. What do you make of now players transferring so many times? Do you hold it against them? Or like, does that bring your stock down to you? Because now we're looking at a college basketball system where a record number are entering the portal, 1,000 plus. So I don't know how much I put much weight into that, because I'm like, yo, go get your bag, to be honest. If the program's not giving you money and you think you can get a higher role, a higher payment, go do your thing. What are your thoughts on, because we're talking a lot of names, and we're going to talk about some more names that have transferred quite a bit. What are your thoughts on the players just transferring in general? Does that bring their stock in your eyes?
I mean, it doesn't really change a ton for me. I also just like understand the space well enough to almost always be able to tell you why someone transferred. It's very clear if they transferred for money, or if they transferred for opportunity, or if they transferred for, you know, a level that's more appropriate for them. Like, it's almost always explainable. Now, I mean, there are a couple of guys that we haven't gotten into, and I'm sure we'll talk about in Elijah Fisher and Bubu Benjamin, who kind of did opposites. Like, they both transferred up from a lower level to a high level. I think one made an outstanding choice and one made a poor choice. So I can judge their choices. I can say maybe you didn't go to a place that is best for you. And as someone who follows the game so closely, I have a decent idea of what will make sense for someone. But, and you talk to an NBA scout if we're talking about, you know, a potential future. Like, they love players that transfer because they know that it's, especially these days, it's rarely, it was a problem. Like, his coach wanted him to leave. Coaches don't really want these guys to leave. NBA scouts love when players transfer because they get to see them in different situations. And it's just like you get 2-3 years to get eyeballs on someone, but you learn so much more about a player when you see them in 3 years on three teams, because now you really get their makeup better than you could with one team.
Yeah, information, like, these scouts get, there's a lot, like, they're CIA when it comes to information gathering. Like, they'll find out everything, but why, like you mentioned, like, the reason why you transferred, scouts will know why. And yeah, I agree with that. I think transferring, especially like for a guy like Xavier Lee, if you want to be considered seriously for the NBA draft, how do you perform at Florida compared to Princeton? That's the biggest question, right? You mentioned you loved one transfer decision, you hated it. I don't want to jump the gun, but is there a transfer decision by Canadian you loved and you hated? You kind of talked, which one was it? Let's hear it.
I loved the move that Bubu Benjamin made. I did not like the move that Elijah Fisher made. For Bubu Benjamin, I think it was just getting out of Tarleton State. Like, that's the situation. And obviously, you know, they believed in him coming out of high school, someone who, you know, popped for me in a couple of spots in terms of Team Canada, where I was really impressed with some of the stuff he did, because he wasn't in the Toronto, Ontario-ish area. He's not someone I was familiar of, you know, back in high school, but he showed some stuff for Team Canada, and Tarleton gave him a chance, and, you know, you got to respect that. But that's an organized, it's a program where, you know, there's issues with coaches, there's issues with rotations, there's issue with personnel. And he's going to go to a program at George Washington and a coach with Chris Caputo, who are going to put him in a very good position. They value, you know, NBA-style analytics. They shoot a lot of threes or rim attempts. They're not going to do a lot of mid-range clutter that Tarleton did a ton of. And it's going to let Bubu Benjamin's game be hit the open threes, which he's done effectively. He's been less efficient because of the dribble shots and the contested shots and the mid-range shots, and get to the basket where he can use his length and finish at the rim. And I think that he's going to open a lot of eyes with what he's able to do in a more analytically advanced situation. I think he's super skilled, and I think he'll have a great year at George Washington with 2 years to play too.
Yeah, I don't know if he was injured this summer with Canada Basketball Global Jam, but he didn't play much. Was sitting on the bench. I would love to know why. If anybody listens to this podcast, knows much about that situation, I want to know why. Hit me up. Elijah Fisher, though, you're saying you didn't like that decision. Obviously, now this is his fourth new team. Started off at Texas Tech, went to DePaul, just wrapped up at Pacific, and is now headed to Seton Hall. What do you make? Obviously, you're saying you don't like that decision. What do you make of just like his NCAA career was once, obviously, the guy that was the most popping out of Canada, the name that, if you thought about the next best talent coming out of Canada, it was, people talked about Elijah Fisher. Tell me about the move to Seton Hall. Why you didn't like it?
All right, let's break this down. So he starts his career at Texas Tech. I remember the day he announced it on TSN. Like, it was a really big deal. Mm-hmm. He obviously, skill-wise, and we could have been able to tell you this from his last couple of years in Canada basketball, like, his skill level was not there as a freshman to be a big contributor. That's fine. And you know, in this day and age, that's enough of a reason to leave sometime. And I get that. But the problem with him was never the physicality. It was never the natural athleticism. It was always going to a place where he can work on skill development. He chose to go to a DePaul team. I'm going to put words into his mouth. Obviously, I wasn't part of the decision making. He probably didn't get a ton of high major looks after barely playing at Texas Tech. DePaul was coming off a year where they were one of the worst teams in the Big East. And they're probably one of the few high major teams that were like, come in and we'll play you. He went there. Obviously, they had a historically bad year. They went 3-29. They're one of the worst offenses in all of the country, let alone power conference hoops. And he's inefficient again. He's good at the basket once again because he's super athletic and finishes strong when he gets there. The jumper's still not there. The passing's still not there. So now there are no more high major offers because he gives up that opportunity. Dave Smart and Pacific, and they're obviously going to be higher on Canadians, and they believe in his ability. They bring him in at Pacific. And finally, you see some of that ability. Now, it wasn't perfect. He still only made 18 threes. He still wasn't really showcasing the passing, but he had that high usage. He got to the free throw line a ton. He had some big scoring games. You're finally starting to see it. And so now it's like, okay, fine. Maybe you want to make more money than what Pacific is offering. I get that. Maybe you want a bigger stage for your final year of basketball. But Seton Hall is coming off a year where they were the worst offensive power conference team in the country. They were 315th in offensive efficiency. There's only 365 teams. So he did it again. Like at Texas Tech, he wants to play high major basketball, so he goes to the worst team. And now after Pacific, he wants his last year to be in high major basketball, and he goes to the worst team. Like, for someone who needs to get to the rim and is not that great of a shooter for a wing, he picked a team with no spacing, with no offensive flow, and it's going to look like the DePaul year. He's going to have some highlight dunks. He's going to get to the basket. But unless he magically, you know, improved his skill level greatly between his junior and senior seasons, it's just going to be the same old couple of seasons. And it would have been awesome to see him on a team with more spacing, with more offensive direction, like Boo Boo Benjamin did at George Washington. Not worry about the high major marking. Go to an offense that will make his skill set shine. And over his 4 years in college, he just never really did that.
Yeah. Not much. You talk about it. Not much of a shooter at this rate. Has his shot above 30% from three throughout his 3 years in college basketball. He went through the draft process this year. I didn't hear much about that. I'm rooting for the kid. You know, obviously it's a tough situation because like he's a guy that tools wise you thought he'd have it, but just couldn't put it all together yet. Maybe he does this year. Who knows? I think a lot of it too is sometimes he has tunnel vision. Not much of a creator. I don't think he's averaged like above 1.6 assists throughout his time at college basketball. And at times, I feel like at Pacific, he wasn't even looking like the best player when he probably should have. And I remember instances watching their games where he's sitting out in crucial moments. So I don't know. It's tough. Obviously, not going to a higher level, like you mentioned, at Seton Hall. More expectations even now. I don't know. It's tough. Elijah Fisher, I'm rooting for the guy. Like I said, his situation has made me kind of tame, relaxed with putting expectations on kids at such a young age. He was a freak, though, in high school basketball. If you watched him, man, just like the stuff he was able to do. But yeah, I don't know. Just tough situation. Any last thoughts on Elijah Fisher? You kind of went off there a little bit.
That last point. No. I wanted to give the context because I don't want to, you know, sit up here and say, well, he made a bad decision. Like, I want to explain what that process 100% would lead to this point. But I think the last point you made is really key. Like, when he was at Crestwood Prep in his early high school days, that's when I was, you know, getting started in the media space. I was in sport media at TMU at the time. So like, I interviewed Roe Russell. I had done stuff with OSBA. Like, I had been in those games, and like, the expectations that were put on him were unfair. There, he had come right after a couple of really awesome, players. Right after RJ Barrett had made the NBA was when his high school tape was really starting to pop. And like, the expectations were unfair. And perhaps some of the decisions he's made in the future were kind of clinging on or holding on to the pedestal he was put on early on. And I think it's a good test case for a type of player where it's like, let's not anoint someone to be something before they get to at least a certain level. And I think that kind of happened.
Yeah. Isaiah Hamilton getting that right now in Canada basketball. I don't put pressure on kids. I hate doing that. But he looked good FIBA U16. I think mentally he just needs to get it all together. But that's a young kid that's, you know, he's like, man, I can't imagine in the social media age when you're putting up dunks like that at that age through the legs. I don't know how I would handle it, but I don't know, man. I think I would handle it worse than Isaiah Hamilton is. I'm not saying he's handling it bad, but I think he's like at a young age, it's so tough, the pressure on you. What I will say is what he has that I don't think Elijah Fisher had is he has a shot. He can shoot. He can shoot the ball. The handle needs to get a lot better. Just like not looking down when you're dribbling, that kind of stuff. The outcome time. Crestwood, I heard obviously just, I don't know if I said this on record before, but I heard a lot of schools, some top schools in the States were obviously trying to get in the mix, talk with him. He decided to stay at Crestwood. Maybe he transfers out, who knows? But But yeah, I think it's probably a good place maybe just to stay for another year. He's still young, you know, just not, it's not a rush right now for him. But any thoughts on Isaiah Hamilton before we get back to some college basketball? I hate putting expectations on these guys, you know, I just hate it.
He made the U16s like the most watchable thing ever because I just wanted to see what Isaiah Hamilton was going to do next. And then he just like somehow found a way to top himself. Like every quarter, every half, like he did something. I was like, oh my goodness, this is insane. The athleticism shooting combo is like college basketball ready now. Like with the way that he hits open threes, the way he hits tough threes. Like he hit a couple of threes in that tournament. I can remember one like fade away in the corner three that he hit in one of those games, which is absolutely insane. The handle will come in time, but at his size, especially if he grows a couple inches, like you don't need an elite handle to be an effective player with the shooting size athleticism combo. I'm high on him. I hope that he does not take the path of some of the guys that have been in his position in the last 5 years.
Yeah, I was in the gym at Fort Erie. I'll be honest, I got blown out. He didn't look too great in that game. Still young. That Fort Erie team is quite experienced. So the Crestwood team is pretty young. But Syracuse was in the building talking to him. So, yeah, guy I got to watch out for, man, Isaiah Hamilton. We'll get back to some college basketball talk. Another guy that was at Global Jam, Aiden Holloway, Alabama. He was originally at Auburn. I remember watching him for the first time. I didn't know he was Canadian until obviously he ends up playing for Canada at the Nike Hoop Summit. And I was there watching him and I'm like, wow, this guy, he can shoot the hell out of the ball. Really good shooter. And yeah, just obviously a lot of the other stuff kind of size wise, kind of an issue, but a good college basketball player and probably one of the top guys. Like we're talking about Xavier Lee. We're talking about Nathan George, Elijah Mahi. Aiden Holloway is right in that mix. What are your thoughts on Aiden Holloway and just obviously heading to another year with Alabama? A lot of expectations that Alabama team has competed in the NCAA tournament, has competed. And Nate Oates, I love the way they run things over there. Just like a fun offense over there. And there's a lot, he's going to get a lot of looks because there's a lot of NBA talent on that Alabama roster.
Yeah, like you talk about guys in a good fit for the way that they play. Aiden Holloway is in a great system with Nate Oates, who's the most analytically savvy head coach, at least amongst the top ones in the country. Like you sit in a press conference with Nate Oates, and it did a couple years ago. Alabama played Zach Edey in Purdue in Toronto. He's the only coach I've ever been in a conference with that references points per possession, not points per game. Like it's that type of small thing. But with Aiden Holloway, unbelievable shooter. We talk about the SEC being the best league in all of college basketball, which is where Holloway played at Alabama. 46% from three in SEC plays. Unbelievable. Absolute sniper, sharpshooter. Can play on ball, can play off ball. He's not the predominant point guard, but with Mark Sears off in the NBA now, LeBaron Filon will take that main role. Aiden Holloway will be the secondary playmaker. He'll start every game for Alabama. He'll shoot a ton of threes, a bunch of rim attempts and floaters, and not a lot of that mid-range clutter. If he tops 40% from three, ups the assist percentage, ups the assist numbers, like he'll at least put himself on draft radars for his senior season. Being nationally ranked, McDonald's All-American is going to immediately have you remain on scouts' radars. Obviously, the size is a big factor, not overly athletic. But if you can continue to shoot the lights out and shoot an NBA shot diet, improve that playmaking, which he did show a little bit more as a freshman, at Auburn, where he struggled a little bit with his shooting efficiency, you combine those two, now you really have something.
Yeah. Aiden Holloway, a name I enjoy watching, especially Alabama. So a name to watch, especially with that program. Are they, I'm going to ask you, what Canadian player do you feel like is the most important when you think about way ahead to March Madness for their team to actually accomplish something this year? What Canadian player do you feel like needs to have the most impact?
All right, I'll drop a name that we haven't talked about yet. I'll go with someone who's been on your show in recent days.
Okay.
Frank Mitchell at
Adventure. Yeah, I love the shout out.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to be able to go to St. Bonaventure's Pro Day, put on by Adrian Wojnarowski in New York City, where I'm currently living, and he was a beast. Obviously, he's had a little bit of an interesting career where he went from, you know, Canadian college basketball to Canisius, where he was an unbelievable rebounder, got his way up to Minnesota, where he was not, it was a mix of things. I don't think he was in a great situation. He wasn't in the greatest of shape. The way that he plays is more of a groundbound big, is not always going to translate up to the high major level. But I saw him this offseason, just a couple weeks ago. Fantastic shape. They love him at St. Bonaventure. He's going to be their starting center. He's going to play a lot. He'll probably average a double-double in the A-10, which is the sixth or seventh best league in all of college basketball. And that will jumpstart his pro career. Whether it's, you know, in the G League on a two-way, starting in the CEBL, blowing in Europe, whatever it might be. This, he will create a pro career out of this season where he will put on real rebounding and scoring numbers around the basket and his conditioning way better than it has been in the past couple of years.
Yeah, a guy I honestly really enjoyed having on the podcast. Went out to St. Bonaventure, chatted with him for, I think, over like an hour plus minutes. Go listen to that podcast if you haven't. His journey is insane. You mentioned, obviously, like Minnesota didn't have the greatest year. He talked about on the podcast. He was also, I don't know if you mentioned on the podcast or he mentioned on the side to me. I don't know if I should mention this, but he was dealing with an injury, to be honest. He was dealing with an injury early on in that time. So obviously not the greatest year. Woj and them speak very highly of him. They had a practice out here in Toronto at Humber College, and I think he's a very sneaky passer. Obviously undersized, can't shoot the ball, let's be real, 6'8", but does all the dirty work. Like that's his game, and he loves it. He knows that. What did Kawhi say, man? Even though it's a bad time to mention Kawhi this time of year, especially with all the stuff that's going on allegations wise, but Boardman gets paid, and he that's basically what he is, right? So his journey's crazy. His journey's crazy.
I saw him get at this practice 3 offensive rebounds in 1 possession right in front of Tom Thibodeau, who was sitting right on
the... Oh, he loved that. Yeah.
If you're going to get 3 offensive boards in 1
that's
possession
the guy.
In front of Tom Thibodeau, even though he's currently unemployed, Tom Thibodeau, I'm sure he'll figure something out. That you're going to get into a coach's good book but just by doing that in front of him.
Yeah. Frank Mitchell, a name I feel like people should know. I probably might be the best, one of the top Canadian big men in college basketball. Another name, probably Mike Nwoko. What are your thoughts on him? He's headed to LSU, was at Miami originally, and then went to Mississippi State. In that situation, he was kind of starting and then sometimes on the bench in terms of crucial minutes when I was watching. Now goes to LSU, a new spot, played at Global Jam, was kind of dealing with the injury. He's kind of like a lob threat, big. Played at the Nike Hoop Summit too. Any thoughts on Michael Nwoko?
Yeah, he's someone that I would have loved to see rather than kind of recycle his way through backup big man on high major team, which he's been doing. Like, I would have loved him to see him drop a little bit of a level. A-10, American, WCC, like some of the guys we've been talking about, Bubba Benjamin and Elijah Mahi and so forth, because he dominate that league athletically. He's athletically superior to, you know, a high mid-major big man. But when you're playing at this level in the power conferences, you're going to get guys. He's probably the most athletic big in nearly any game he plays in. But when you have guys that are, you know, 75%, 80% the athlete that you are, which everyone in the power conferences are, you have to have a certain level of skill that just he has never developed in his college career. You drop down the level, you just develop confidence. Like, you're able to dunk on guys that you weren't able to dunk on before. You can push guys around. It can really jumpstart your career. We looked at like another Canadian, Javonte Brown, who was kind of going around from high major to high major, goes down to Rhode Island and has a really good, you know, productive season. He could have done that, and I think that would have been really good. He still has 2 years of eligibility. He could have got dropped down, showed up in athleticism, and found his way back up. At LSU, they're not a very good team, and they're playing in that loaded SEC. So I expect more of the same from last year. Like, he'll play some minutes, he'll start some games, he'll sit some games. He'll finish around the rim with some dunks and not provide a lot of other elements to his game outside of that and rebounding.
Any other names that you like? College basketball. I have a list of guys. I'm kind of biased. Obviously, some guys I've had on the podcast. I'll give a shout out to, let's go wrap it, Ishan Sharma, shooter. He was at Virginia. I don't know if he shot the greatest percentage at Virginia. St. Louis, he's going over there, analytic-driven team, coaching staff. I just think for a guy that can shoot lights out, shot lights out in high school basketball, was the high school player of the year in Canada, was a great podcast guest too. I'll give him that. One of my favorites, to be honest too. That shooting, to me, like what many Canadians are missing, is transferable. I think everything else in terms of defense, that kind of stuff, and he understands it, needs to obviously catch up to at the NCAA level. But what are your thoughts on, any thoughts on Ishan Sharma?
He made an amazing transfer decision to go to St. Louis with a program that's going to, you know, let him take those shots from three. And then Robbie Avila, nicknamed Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, he's the best big man passer in the country. So he's going to get attention at the high post, and he's going to find Sharma, and Sharma's going to have 10, 15 times better looks than he got at Virginia. And with someone who can shoot as well as he can, he's proven it over his, you know, youth career, he's going to be shooting 40% from three this year or the next. And that's going to pay off big time in the long run for him.
Yeah, a name I think we should watch out entering his sophomore year. Maybe throw me a name that you like.
Yeah, Nana Owusu-Anane. Played at Brown for a couple of years. A big college basketball reporter, John Rothstein, made his way out to Grand Canyon practice, which is where Owusu-Anane is now after sitting out last year due to injury at Brown. He said he was the most important player. And, you know, a team in Grand Canyon doesn't have a lot on the wing. He's probably going to play a lot of 3 and 4, whereas he was playing a lot of 4/5 in the Ivy League where there weren't as many good athletes. If he can show off a floor game, you know, hit some jumpers, play, you know, off on the ground a little bit with his dribbling skills, he'll be able to get himself onto NBA radars, whether it's a two-way or the summer league, whatever it might be. Grand Canyon's in the Mountain West now, which is one of the best conferences in the sport. He has the chance to really put his name in there as someone to keep an eye out on when it comes to draft season.
Yeah, a guy that has played with Canada basketball on the youth level. He was injured last year, missed out, I think, the entire year. But obviously now is headed over there. So a name I know, Patrick Tatum, who used to coach with the FIBA United team. He loves him. That's his guy. So shout out to Nana. I'll be watching some games over there. I'll watch some GCU basketball. I'm going to throw you another name. Christian Natu. 6'11", I believe. Washington, head over there, was a Florida State. I don't know if he played much, but played this summer with Romania basketball. Interesting decision. I think he got probably some good experience there. Any thoughts on him?
Yeah, so he is someone that at 6'11 is trying to be a guard. He's not someone that's going to be like, we just talked about Michael Nwoko, who's going to like rim run and finish at the hoop. Like, Nitu's a lot thinner, but he's also not trying to do that. Like, I don't want to compare him to Wemby because he's obviously not Victor Wembanyama, but it's the same concept of, yeah, you are center height, but you don't play that way. So that's going to have its drawbacks as someone who, you know, he's not the most skilled guy in the universe. And like, Washington lost one of their key forwards for this year, and their starting center, Frank Kepnang, is like unbelievably injury prone. And he's probably going to play more than originally expected when he signed there for this year. But I just don't think he's a big, both in terms of size and in terms of his mindset of what he wants to do on the floor. So we'll see sort of the balance between he wants to be more skill-based and he's also 7 feet tall and should probably get stronger and work on being a big man.
Let me throw you some other names. Tristan Beckford, Felix Caceres. Thoughts on those guys? Felix entering Colorado didn't have much of a... he played some minutes. I think it was in a rotation early on. But Tristan Beckford, a guy that I think made probably... Like, I like these decisions of not going to these high majors, these top schools. He's headed to South Florida, probably going to get a lot of minutes, potentially. But I think that South Florida team is also good, too. I'm forgetting who coaches, but I think he should be at Alabama. So they've been stacking up on Canadians. Onyx Nanny, another guy I like it probably in the long term, the size he has. Thoughts on those guys. I'll throw you another name, too, Jordan Dumont. Give me your thoughts on Jordan Dumont, Felix, Tristan Beckford.
See, I'm glad you brought up those three guys because this is where context, like, because I follow the sport so closely, like, I have every element of context. Whereas, like, if you're just a Canadian basketball fan watching from the side, you might not fully grasp it. They all made very different choices and they're going to have very different roles this year. Like, talk about Felix Caceres on a Colorado team that is almost entirely filled with freshmen. He's a sophomore, but he's one of the more experienced guys on the roster. So he's going to be depended on as like someone to play key minutes versus you look at Tristan Beckford, or even you go to Onyx, like at South Florida, Brian Hodgson and South Florida loaded up this year with seniors and grad students. And if I were to rank their position on South Florida, they're the 11th and 12th man to start the season. Obviously, both really skilled and they have the chance to get past that at some point. But I don't think either are going to play a lot as freshmen. That doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean they're, you know, having a bad season or pick the wrong spot. It just means they're going to have a year to develop and get a lot better. And then you talk about Jordan Dumont, who really played behind a lot of guys at Villanova last year. What I've been hearing from a lot of sources is maybe VCU wasn't the greatest choice. I think he played 4 or 5 minutes in their exhibition game against Villanova. So he is not a top 8, 9, 10 guy in their rotation either. So you talk about schools, like with all these transfer portals, like you can get recruited over. With the South Florida guys, I know they came with the guy that was originally at Arkansas State, and I think that they'll eventually have a chance to play huge minutes for him, but it might not be this year.
Good point. And good insight, too. I feel like a lot of these guys, like Jordan Dumont, I watched him play, I think it might have been FIBA U18 or a summer a few years ago, but I remember watching him just like in camp with that. So I just remember seeing the size and be like, okay, I'm keeping an eye on this guy. Yeah, and the shooting, man. The shooting to me, if you can shoot, I'm going to keep an eye on you if you can shoot. Another guy that can shoot, I remember watching a game at Baylor last year where they kind of like knocked him saying he's a one-trick pony. That's all he does, Jalen Celestine. Now headed to Cincinnati. Thoughts on him? He's probably the last guy I'll throw at you and get your thoughts on.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about one more guy after that really
quickly. Yeah, of course. Let's do it.
So for Celestine, like, I like him a lot because he knows his role. He's not trying to do too much. He's not trying to do something that, like, he gets minutes because he has forward size and he can knock down three-pointers. And that's what he does. And he's going to help any team he's on, whether it's, you know, at Cincinnati or whatever he moves on to next, CEBL, whatever. Like, you're going to get him because you know that he is 6'7", has decent athleticism, and can knock down threes, isn't going to take bad shots. And that's just like a pro mentality in college. And you're always going to want someone like that on your team. And the other guy that I wanted to mention really quickly is Dylan Grant at Rutgers.
Yep.
He did not have the chance to play a lot in his freshman year behind another star freshman, Dylan Harper, and of course, Ace Bailey. But he, you know, raw tools, just like pure athleticism, super elite. Someone that I think that he's going to have a much bigger role on a Rutgers team that lost a lot of talent. And I would not be surprised if we're talking about him this time next year as someone who can take a serious leap in college basketball.
Yeah. Dylan Grant, a name that I like. Like you mentioned, didn't play. I remember going out to watch Xavier Lee versus Dylan Harper, Ace Bailey in New Jersey, I think back in December. He didn't play that game or much at all from what I remember. But a bit after that, I think Rutgers started playing him more often. So I think he's a guy that the coach loves. I think they have a vision for him. Obviously, it wasn't just a 1 year like, hey, we're going to get you. And he's a young guy coming in. So, yeah, Dylan Grant, another name I think you should watch out. I feel like we nerded out a bit. We kind of went through a bunch of Canadian names. If you're like a fan of Canadian basketball, like of guys that are in college basketball, I'm trying to think of names that we haven't mentioned. But if you're not mentioned, I'll be honest, this is not like the be all end all. Like, this is not like you're not going to be a player, that kind of stuff. This is just names that we kind of went through, some of the top names that have made splashes in Canadian basketball, in college basketball this past few years, and names that kind of I like. Obviously, a little bit biased. Some guests that I've had on, you know, we got to talk about them. But I want
to
anything you want to say? Yeah.
I'm just going to say a couple names. I'm not going to give any background, which other really good Canadians. Addison Patterson last year at Eastern Michigan. Baraka Okoji going to have a really good year at Mercer. Tyson Dunn played at Buffalo last year, former U Sports guy, UC San Diego, starting point guard. TJ Hurley, elite scorer at Vermont, who's going to be really good this year. And then half of Pacific, all Canadians, they're going to be really good.
Yeah, LIU too. And then I think there's another one. Maine has a bunch of Canadian guys too. Watch those rosters over there. What was I going to say? Other than that, Matthew, see, this is why I enjoy having you on the podcast, because you named a bunch of guys that some of them I didn't hear of, to be honest with you. I know the top guys, so, and I think this is going to be very educational for a lot of guys that are trying to get an understanding of Canadian college basketball. Matthew is an amazing follow. Before I let you go, Matthew, though, I want to get your starting five of Canadian college players. If I had to give you, like, give me your starting five of, like, if you had to make a roster right now to go compete, maybe in the SEC. And the ACC, what would your roster be? And or how about this? Give me your starting five and what conference they would be best at.
Okay, I got to think about this now. A little bit of team fit. I mean, for me, I think I'm going to go Xavier Lee at the one. He's proven that he's going to be able to do that. Aiden Holloway at the two. He's the best scorer in this class. So I'm going to do those two guys pretty simple. I'll go Boo Boo Benjamin at the three. Just really big fan of his game. Think he's going to have an awesome year. We'll go Elijah Mahi at the four. Like we kind of said, he has that Jalen Williams type build where he could, you know, do some guard stuff while still having forward size. And then the five is the tough one. I'll go Frank Mitchell. I just hyped him up. So we'll go Xavier Lee, Aiden Holloway, Bubba Benjamin, Elijah Mahi, Frank Mitchell.
That's a good starting five. I might go Nathan George, Xavier Lee, Mahi, and I'm trying to figure out who would be my, how many people I just named right there. That's three. I got three. You know what? I might go a little bit. I like Boo Boo, but I might go with another name just to keep it a little bit. I might go Ifosa, to be honest. I need someone that's going to attack the rim with, but then I need some spacing now with my center. Or you know what? I might just, let's do it. Those might be my five right there. Xavier Lee, Xavier Lee, I said Nathan George, I said Elijah Mahi, I said Ifosa and Celestine. Those five. Let me know if you guys, maybe message us your guys' top five Canadians or five guys you guys will be watching. Matthew, I can't thank you enough for coming on this podcast, joining me. Where can people find your work, tap in with you and all the stuff that you're doing? Because I feel like you are a must follow on Twitter. I don't know where else you're at, but let people know where you can find you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Like, Twitter is where you want to find me. That's at Matthew Winick. Matthew, first name, WINICK. I put out spreadsheets. I put out rankings. I put out lists. I put out thoughts. Like, anything to do with college basketball, you will find that there. And I will always have a bias towards my Canadians because that's where I got my start. And that's always where I'm going to, you know, fall back on if there's anything.
Matthew, is there a team you're watching? Just forget about Canadians. A team that you're watching, maybe a sleeper team that you really like this year?
Ooh, that's a good one. I love Texas Tech and I love Louisville. Those are two teams that are going to be really fun to watch. If they're on TV, I'd suggest turning it on. Great offenses, great coaches. Texas Tech and Louisville will be a lot of fun.
Big Mikal Brown Jr. fan?
Oh, he's awesome. Him and Ryan Conwell, best backcourt in college basketball outside of Purdue, because I have to say that.
Yeah. Matthew, can't thank you enough again. This has been the Canadian Basketball Show, your go-to spot for the latest news stories and analysis on Canadian basketball. I've been your host, Lee Ben Osmond. Give us a like, give us a rating, tap in with Matthew, and yeah, we'll see you. Tap into college basketball, man, November 4th. That's the day I can't wait for.
Oh, yeah.